Coming up on today's show.
It's easy to be like, you know, procrastinate on stuff, but you know what? Time's finite. If you got the songs in you, make them, you know, chase down those ideas.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Remember, too, about the other free option for interaction with this show that I've been mentioning for a little bit now, Featured Up, which you can find a link to in this episode's description. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from New York City, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who released a new album last month. Over the past 15 years, he has created an extensive body of work, totaling 8 full-length albums and 8 EPs in his solo catalog alone. His music has been featured on Sirius XM, and last year, 2 of his songs were featured in the movie Sid Is Dead. Along the way, he has also not only been reviewed by HuffPost, but his onstage journey includes performances in England, Denmark, across the U.S., and sharing a bill with acts ranging from Wang Chung to Nelly, to Beatles offspring James McCartney, and more. He is also a 2-time finalist in the prestigious John Lennon Songwriting Contest. You've been hearing a song of his called Internet Women. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Dan Maraldi.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Dan. Thank you so much for making time to speak with me today. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Me too.
But let's back up to the song that was just playing, called Internet Women. Let's have you tell the audience all about that track, if you would, please.
Yeah, definitely. So that is one of the new songs on my new record, the song Internet Women. It's a song that I had the riff and I had the opening line for a couple of years, and it just sort of stuck in my head as incomplete. And we got married a few months ago, and I all of a sudden realized what to do with the story and what to do with the riff. And so it's loosely the story of how I met my wife online dating, and we live in the neighborhood of Ridgewood, but it's also on the border of Bushwick. So it's the opening line of I've been sleeping in Bushwick, and it's the way people meet on the internet in this age. And once I started getting the story put together, it all just came together pretty naturally. And then I just needed that bridge section, and I was really pleased. Because some songs you write really quickly. Some songs, you know, they just sort of sit in your closet of unfinished fragments. And this was one of the ones that was sitting there where I knew that I wanted to finish it. And I wanted to not, like, make it sound like it was overthought. But I just had to be patient with it. And then finally it just revealed itself to me.
I'm curious what your specific system is for Dan Maraldi. Obviously, if I asked 9 other songwriters, I'll probably get 10 different answers. But when you say that you had a song like this one that was kind of sitting in the closet and you knew it was unfinished, but you wanted to finish it at some point, how do you remember to keep track of those songs that are hanging around that I know I want to finish this someday, but I just can't come up with how to complete it right now?
So sometimes things exist in notebooks where if it's maybe phrases, I think a lot of times now in the smartphone age, I have so many voice memos of things of maybe it's a little guitar riff or progression where it's me humming over some chords, or it's me spoken word, you know, saying some lyrics that come to my head as I'm walking to the subway. Mm-hmm. And then I also have a long running note in my notes app on my phone, which have all these different lines that I sometimes will be like, oh, let's see what cool ones or the alliteration that I like. And I'll go through and try to harvest from that. But I think I'm pretty good at like about documenting things and keeping track of like demos, fragments of demos, and being able to find them. Or just, you know, it's good to go through the voice memo app on the phone, because all of a sudden it'll be like, I forgot about this one. Mm. Then it comes to you as new and you're like, this was cool. And then you get excited and start figuring out how you complete the puzzle of the song.
That's a fun discovery, because I've mentioned once or twice before about you know, a songwriter that said to me, don't turn the radio on. Don't turn the radio on. I don't want to be influenced by something I hear on the radio. I'm working on something in my head right now. And in this case, you go back through your phone and you find something that you go, ooh, this was neat. I like this. Mm-hmm. I got to do some of this. And yeah. It's your own. So you're not mm-hmm. being influenced by something on the radio. It's something that is kind of undiscovered. But I like the description that you just gave, because I'm kind of picturing, yeah, but there still has to be a folder, be it physical or electronic, somewhere that separates out these are like almost done songs, but they still need a little something, as opposed to, yeah, this is just kind of a whole long laundry list of riffs or melodies or some lyric ideas. So I like that you do have some sort of sense, some sort of logic, some sort of order to this is where I look for these things. And some of it, like you said, is just flat out, you know, I'm just good at kind of recall and knowing where to go to look for things that might complete it or things that are close to done. And I love, just to bring this all together, I love how meant to be this all was. You know, that Internet Women was the song that you thought, I just can't complete it for some reason. Well, that's because your life wasn't complete yet. You hadn't met, yep. you hadn't gotten married, you hadn't realized that, aha, this was all meant to yep. come at the same time.
Exactly.
In the intro, I said that you just released a new album last month. Congratulations on that. 10 songs.
Thank you.
And the album is called Ulysses. What's with the title? Where did you record this? Over what period of time was this done? Give us all the details.
Sure. So Ulysses, the recording began in earnest in January of 2023.
Wow.
So I had moved into this new apartment. I was previously living in Greenwich Village by Washington Square Park. And in that interim of moving, I really didn't have a home studio set up in place. And so it took a few months of getting settled before I actually was going to be able to start recording, because I've gotten in the habit of always recording, and I record in GarageBand, and sometimes I'm just making demos, and sometimes I'm making the foundations of the next album. And so I knew that I had 4 songs that were definitely completed going in, where I had the song Ulysses, which I knew in my heart I wanted that to be the opening track, because I just heard that kind of fuzzy introduction to the album. And then I had 2 that were maybes, and then I had the Internet Women fragment and another fragment that I completed. And then I just sort of started going. And once you start recording and you're playing your guitar regularly, you start writing new songs that come kind of spontaneous. And then, so I just started working on this batch of songs, where I like to think in terms of the listening experience of being around, just because, you know, in the era where people's patience and attention spans are a lot shorter, mm-hmm. I still like making albums. And so my sweet spot is kind of figuring out the short album, where I still want to make an album, but I'm also trying to tailor it to listening habits, where I can find that balance of feeling satisfied as a creative person, but also not kidding myself that, you know, people want a Dan Maraldi double or triple album. And so I sort of looked at, okay, what's the listening experience with these 10 songs? Where do we go? And just developed it from there. And there were other songs that the recording started that I've put aside in another folder, but I was like, okay, let's get these 10 across the finish line. And that's where it goes. And one of the ones, once I had the recording set up in place, was I wrote that holiday song that closes the album. And I was definitely motivated to get that out before the next Christmas season. And so that was also like a driving thing to be like, but if you finish the Christmas song, then you can also get the other songs all mastered together. So when I look at the album sequence, you open with a song like Ulysses, which is a song about touring, the sacrifices of being on the road, or the experience I've had where either when I was out with my own band, the cost on personal relationships, but also I tour managed for a bit on like a 3.5 month long tour. And, you know, you see the wear and tear, and it sort of had the idea of like, you know, the Odyssey and Odysseus/Ulysses out trying to get back home and see what's left of the personal relationships. And I kind of like the whole arc of starting with Ulysses. And then if you subtract the Christmas song, you would get to You're My Home, where it's a song about being home, where the other songs in the middle are not related to it. So I'm not going to say, oh, it's a whole concept album where I've recreated the journey of Ulysses in a Homeric tale. It's not that, but it does have that little bit where once I saw that piece appear, I was like, ooh, you know, let's do that there.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I like the description that you gave of the song Ulysses, but then I have to ask, why is it titled Ulysses?
So in one version of the Homeric Odyssey tale, it's Odysseus, and then it's, I think it would be either the Greek one, it's in Ulysses. And so there's a little bit of like the allusion to that. And then also going back to a little bit of like James Joyce, the book Ulysses and the complex tale where that's supposed to be its own mirroring thing.
Okay.
It's one of those things where I saw some parallels, but I didn't go like down that way. I was more telling the story about touring and the idea of home and all the various ways that things can go wrong, buses being broken down.
Yeah.
And, you know, just trying to hold on to your sanity as you're trapped in a van with, you know, six other very different personalities.
Well, and funny enough, my mind went to Ulysses S. Grant. And then as you were first telling what the story is about, I thought, oh, maybe he's ultimately going to say, oh, the band that I was tour managing was called Ulysses. But anyhow, audience, that will give you all the more incentive to go look for not only the song, but the whole album. Before we get ahead of ourselves, even though there are going to be Dan Maraldi fans, followers, who come to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, for the others who are just meeting you for the first time, Dan, take us back through your history first so that the uninitiated can get to know more about you first.
Sure. So my music career, there was about 5 years before I made my first album when I'm in that whole teenage phase of different bands, like high school bands, college bands, and upon graduating, doing my undergraduate degree, I decided to pursue music for a bit. It was, you know, in that window of time where there was the financial crisis, and it was sort of like, well, there aren't a lot of jobs right now, and I do love music. Why not? Maybe this is a sign from the universe that I should chase the dream for a bit. So in 2009, my debut record came out, and I started to put together a band so that I could go out and tour and, you know, do the whole band in a van thing and, you know, show up playing the dive bars and playing your heart out and trying to win the fan base. And so I had this band, the Albino Winos.
And you were based where at the time?
I was based in Cleveland. I was born in Cleveland. Okay. And so from there, we would do these tours where we'd go up the East Coast, DC, New York, Boston. And then we'd always bolt back home so that, you know, people could work their other jobs that were actually, you know, paying some sort of like, you know, financial benefit. Is because when you're playing the dive bars, you're not exactly making a lot of money playing original music. And then, you know, bolt over to Chicago, go to Milwaukee, down to St. Louis. And then we did all these tours where we worked really hard, and I'm really proud of the stuff we did. And I sometimes go back and I'll have like board recordings, and I was like, we were a pretty good little band. And but eventually I was somewhere in Indiana, and I just had this epiphany that I had to figure out a new way to go about doing it. Mm. And so I decided that I was going to shift and move over to New York City.
Now, nowhere in everything that you just described for us did you say that you took guitar lessons, or I started off playing drums, or I actually also play keys. So backing up to the new album, Ulysses, do you play all the instruments on Ulysses?
I do not. My thing is, in addition to being a songwriter, I consider myself a singer. And so the thing that I really enjoy doing is singing. And so on the record, the thing I'm most proud of besides the songs is the vocal arrangements. Those are all me. Mm-hmm. And then I'm playing rhythm guitar. I play some of the keys, some of the bass, and then I'll bring in some friends. Because one of the things, I recorded this in my apartment, my parts, is that I have a drummer friend who will do things remotely where I'll send him a rough version of the drums mm-hmm. that was either created in GarageBand, and then he'll send me those stems back. And then I also have a few different guitar players that I can always trust to, you know, get the job done, because there are a few recordings, not on this record. No, any of the guitar solos, those are not mine. Those are either Ray Flanagan, who's an amazing guitar player from Cleveland, and then my good friend Nathan Hedges, who's also a super gifted guitar player who did some of the guitar work on Existential Days and the Christmas song. But like Ulysses, Bathwater, and then on Follow Me, those were all Ray, who's just a guitar ace. So I know when to bring in, you know, additional help.
Yeah, and I admire that because, you know, as much as I did my research and I looked on, I think it was Instagram in particular, and there's plenty of pictures of you playing the guitar live, I do love when a guest comes on the show and says, look, there's a lot of musicians out there who are way more talented than me, and they'll say at whatever instrument it is that they play. They might be a piano player, and there's way better piano players, or there's way better guitar players, or whatever. So I like when someone is honest enough to say, you know, yeah, I can get my way around and I can write on the guitar, or I'll, you know, I'll do fine playing live. But when it comes to something like a recording, like, I want the best, and I've got these guys back in Cleveland, I've got these guys here, I've got this guy over here. So now let's go back to the story that you were talking about being in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And getting to that point, 3 months ago, back on episode 527, my guest was singer, songwriter, piano player Emmy Joe, who had actually moved to New York City 16 months earlier from Nebraska. And Dan, as much as we hear guests on the show talking a lot about moving to Nashville or even LA, you, like Emmy Joe, are someone that we just heard is not originally from New York City. So when was this that you finally got to the point where you were in Indiana and you said, I got to do something different? And by the way, when you did decide I'm going to move to New York City, did you know anybody there? Because I'm pretty sure Emmy Joe said that she and her husband moved there not knowing anyone at all.
So I was lucky. So I, as I was rethinking my business model and path of survival in the arts, this was probably late 2013 going into 2014.
Okay.
And I learned that NYU has a music business master's degree program. And so between tours, I secretly studied for the GRE and got into the NYU Steinhardt Music Business Master's program. And my band and I were driving back home from South by Southwest, and I gave them the news that I was going to move to New York. And they were very supportive. And I was lucky moving here is that my sister was doing a postdoc at NYU. And so it was really nice to have like a family member to be there for emotional support and potential, you know, bail you out of jail if you need it. She didn't have to do that. And that's my sister Emily was there the first 2 or 3 years that I was in New York City. So I had the benefit of showing up for the, you know, grad school where you have a lot of new people who all want to make friends. And so I was really lucky to meet music-minded people because I know that moving to New York, even though it's so populated, I had heard from a different friend of mine who had briefly lived there talking about how lonely they felt when they first moved there when they didn't know anybody. So that was in my head to not like, you know, be antisocial when I showed up at NYU orientation. And so I made sure that I connected with people. And then, of course, it was wonderful having my sister. My sister has always been so supportive and, you know, introduced me to her friends. And so I was able to connect with people.
See, I love everything that you're talking about that's not music related, because I think musicians, recording artists, songwriters get so focused on, and of course, it is the business and you do need it to be successful to pay the bills, but that you do forget that there are other elements away from that that are going to be really important. So for you to be encouraged that, hey, look, you need to kind of be a bit extroverted, don't fall into loneliness, and even something like having a sister to tell you things like, I mean, I was just in New York City, what was that, in November or October? And it can get really confusing there, especially with the subways and one-way streets. And, you know, I was even reading before I went there about, is it better to take taxis or rideshare? So when you have someone there that can help you with these general life things, it's only going to make the music part that much more of a smoother adjustment. I mean, granted, it's easier said than done. So I love that you had the foresight to kind of seize upon all that stuff. And then, of course, as you said, you know, NYU. Now, something else, Dan, that you have in common with Emmy Jo besides moving to New York City is that she talked about how she really wasn't performing live very much at all. You've got a show in September in Cleveland. Last month, you performed in Denmark. And the month before that, you performed at Bowery Electric there in New York. Yet, despite all that, and despite what we heard about how much the band was doing when you lived in Cleveland, not to mention what I rattled off at the start of this episode, you say that you do not tour extensively. Why is that? And by the way, do please tell us anyway about having performed in Denmark last month.
Of course. So touring at the level I was doing it is very expensive. And not, you know, there's a cost factor to it in terms of, like, you know, like, it's nice to stay at a hotel. And depending on where you are, each hotel night is several, you know, can be like $200 at least. And a lot of these, you know, bills that you're playing as an original band, you know, trying to play whatever the local place that allows original music, you're doing some sort of, you know, door split that is not really going to cover much beyond that on the best night. And so there's the financial aspect of it. There's also just like the amount of logistics involved, where I'm not opposed to touring. I just, if I were to do it, I'd have to know that there was an existing real demand that would financially make sense. I don't see that at this point. So instead, I try to be strategic, where I will play, I shoot to do it quarterly in New York. So I'm not trying to not overdo it in the market. I also don't own a car, you know, like a good chunk of New Yorkers. So getting out on the road for these weekend getaways can be a hassle. Like, I think the last time I played outside of like the normal like run of New York or Cleveland was, I took like a bus with my guitar up to Boston to play a show in Boston and then took a bus back, where it just is not, you know, without a car. And also just, it just doesn't make sense for me at the level that I play. And so then you try to also think in terms of like, what are the big shows that, you know, make music fun and also are buzzworthy. And so one of the people who's been supportive of my career for a good number of years is this guy, David Bash, who has a festival called International Pop Overthrow, where he caters to the power pop rock scene, where he does events in Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, and then a number of cities across the U.S. There are more than what I just listed. And then he does a week where he books bands at the Cavern Club in Liverpool, which I'm a huge Beatles fan, and that's sort of the mecca for all things Beatles. And so I had played the New York event in 2022, and after the show, he's like, that was great. Would you be interested in coming to England and playing the Cavern Club? And the guys that I was playing with, I ended up doing that show as a trio. And I was like, hey guys, do you want to do it? And they were all kind of like potentially interested. And as you know, he checked in with me a few months later, and I was like, you know, sometimes you just got to say yes to things, where I was like, yeah, that's a cool story. That's something like, that sounds fun. Yeah. And so I said yes. And then one by one, the various band members told me their excuses of why they couldn't do it. And I was like, okay. So I figured out a way to get over there, figured out a way to get a guitar, and played two nights at the Cavern. And it was a blast. Recorded up on Bandcamp. I have a live board recording from the second night I did it, where it's just me acoustic. And then my parents, they love to travel. And so we met up for a bit, and they went to the Cavern shows, which was kind of cool. And my dad plays piano on a song from my previous record. The album's called Radio Friendly Darling, but the song's called Words to a Song. And so he hopped up on stage and played the piano part at the Cavern Club, which, you know, is a good story for him to be able to tell his tennis buds.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was fun. So that sort of all leads into how Denmark happened, where when I came back, David Bash, the organizer, then went off to Copenhagen to do that International Pop Overthrow event. And then I played the New York one this past November, and we were talking about it, and he's like, oh, you know, think about other events you might want to do. And I was like, tell me more about Copenhagen, because I'd never been to Denmark. And he's like, yeah. And so we stayed in touch on that, and then figured out how to make that happen. So so it was one of those things where my wife and I, we spent a few days in Italy, and then we went over to Denmark, and I had networked with some of the bands there to arrange for a guitar. And then I was also just like, how do you, you know, you're always trying to do something to make your album release special. So I'm like, I'm going to time the release of Ulysses with this show in Denmark.
So cool.
And so it was like a great way to just to celebrate it. And also, like, these International Pop Overthrow events, the crowd that it brings are people who are interested specifically in the genre that I play. Mm-hmm. And so it was the right audience to do it. And so, yeah, it was just a really fun night.
I love it. Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. By the way, folks, since I mentioned Emmy Jo a couple times now, on the show page for Dan's episode on my podcast website, nhte.net, I'm going to put a link to my interview with her from March on episode 527, so you can go back and listen to that. She and I really hit it off, as you will hear. Denmark, Dan, is a great highlight, and so is having gotten two songs placed in the movie Sid Is Dead last year at a time when so many songwriters and artists are clamoring for film and or TV placement. And this will serve, by the way, as a teaching moment for anyone in the audience who is trying for exactly that. How did you get those placements? Did you know the music supervisor? Did you use some kind of service? Do you have a manager or someone working for you that got that for you? What were the mechanics of getting two Dan Maraldi originals into Sid Is Dead?
So I had signed a non-exclusive deal with a company that does music placement, and it's been in their database for a long time in terms of just like they've been pitching things for a while. And so, you know, it just happened where finally this movie had been sitting in limbo needing music. And it was just, you know, it was one of those things where the opportunity came about where the movie company was on a bit of a, you know, budget crunch, and they needed well-produced rock songs, and those two landed it in there. And it was pretty darn exciting when it all happened, because, you know, one of them was a song that was 10 years old, and one of them was another song that was used in like a key scene of the, I guess the action climax of the movie. And it's one of these songs that I had written years earlier, but it was during the pandemic that I finally recorded the song because it just seemed relevant. And, you know, when you're just trying with all that whole weird time to suddenly be able to have it, you know, be used in film, it was pretty darn exciting.
No doubt. Are you at liberty to disclose the name of that company that you were signed with that got you these placements?
Yes, it's Black Market Music.
Okay. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from New York City by singer, songwriter, guitar player Dan Maraldi. Visit his official website at danmaraldi.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard him talk about Ulysses, his new 10-song album that came out last month. Once you land on his site, tap or click into the store section for physical units, CDs, to purchase from Dan's music catalog. You can also buy his music digitally from the likes of Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. Yes, give him a follow on Spotify, but don't just stream his music. On the homepage of danmaraldi.com, you will see logos, links for social media. Use those to follow and engage with Dan on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Remember that on September 15, he will be performing at the Winchester in Cleveland, Ohio. This morning, as I was putting this interview together, I was sending an e-introduction. Ironically, it was born out of a recent episode of this podcast. And the e-introduction had to do with the OWL app, which is funny since the OWL app is all about helping people get connected. I should mention that I was also live on OWL as I was sending that email and as I was putting this interview together. That's one of the many nice things about OWL. And by the way, I'm saying OWL like the bird, except it's spelled with two W's and two L's. Going live is not like what you think of for, say, Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. You can be doing other things while you're live on OWL because it simply means that you're ready for any and all phone calls that people want to make to you through there while you are live. As I've mentioned in the past, if you see someone on there that you'd like to connect with and they are not live, you simply tap the request to go live button and they will get notified. Then when they do go live, you get notified of that and can give them a call. Remember, this is all done through the app, which means there's privacy in that your phone number does not get displayed. Check it out on my podcast website, nhte.net. Tap or click into the news section and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The OWL app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It's a required field. Get on OWL and make valuable connections for your career. Dan, in there I mentioned about people being able to buy your music through your website, and back in the intro, I said that you've now done 8 albums with this latest release, Ulysses.
Mm-hmm.
You started
yes.
to mention this earlier, but I'm curious as to why you still make albums, even though it tends to go against the current trend, which favors singles.
So my heroes are album bands, album people. My favorites are The Beatles, Dylan, The Who, The Stones, and I love listening to albums. I know that for the sake of playlisting things on Spotify, you're encouraged to release a lot of singles, and I do release a good amount, but it's mainly for the sake of pitching to playlists, because if you release 10 songs on an album, you can only pitch one of those songs, and once the album's out, you can't go back and pitch the other 9 to the Spotify curated things. You can always go to independent people, but for the sake of this, I still like making albums, and that's what my heroes did. And I also like the, so I don't feel like I just make singles. Some songs, you know, are meant to be singles, but there are also songs that I think you have to sit with for a little bit before they're going to grow on you. And those, you know, left turns or surprise moments are best when you're able to, for me, when I'm able to curate it for an album, so that, you know, you can keep track of what you want to give to your audience, but also, you know, explore a different sound on something. And, you know, all the songs kind of get to talk to each other in terms of like how one sits next to the other. Because even as I'm like making the demos, I will throw them on a playlist on my phone, and I sequence the demos on things when I'm still figuring out how things come together. So I'm always thinking in terms of, oh, this is a good opener. This one sounds really good when it's followed by this one.
Wow.
And so, you know, I'm sure that there are some people who would critique how I assembled it, but you know what? I sequenced it the way I thought it should be sequenced. And so it comes from that, like, you know, how I like listening to albums. And then also when bands will be releasing a ton of singles leading up to an album, sometimes I don't want to actually listen to the singles until the album's out, because I want to experience the album. And so that's sort of how I like to consume it. And so in a parallel, it's how I like to present it.
But I mentioned CDs and I mentioned digital. Should I be saying vinyl? Is that a thing for Dan Maraldi Music, or is that not current? Is it future? Where do you come down on vinyl?
Okay. I love vinyl. I love the thrill of going to a record store, the hunt of the vinyl and all that stuff. But I have 2 threads on this whole thing about vinyl. Is that one, it's expensive to make. And at this point, you know, when I'm playing shows, it's heavy to haul around when I'm hauling my gear to places. And I just don't know if there's enough of a demand for me to make vinyl pressings on something. And then the other thing is where, so not to be super nerdy, but if you're going to make vinyl, the best way to appreciate something that was pressed to vinyl is something that would have been recorded on analog. Because there's a whole thing, and I don't know if you ever listened to any Neil Young interviews about his thoughts on analog versus digital, is that if I'm going to make a vinyl record, if you're going from a digital source and then pressing it to vinyl, it's more of a making vinyl for the sake of vinyl, as opposed to this is the best sonic quality of the work. And so that's why I make CDs, because I recorded digitally, and that you're going to get the maximum fidelity of what I've created on a digital level. That being said, I don't sell a ton of CDs, and a lot of cars don't even have CD players anymore, but I still make them out of stubbornness. But I could see me doing an experimental limited run on a future release of pressing vinyl, just to sort of see how it goes. But that's my thoughts on vinyl. Love it, but I also think in terms of like audio quality and whether it's just vinyl for the sake of vinyl versus you getting the best sonic experience.
Well, and I love all that. You know, I also think back, I think it was my recent interview with Jeremy Parsons, where we talked about just that feeling, literally that feeling of walking out of a show and having something physical in your hand to leave with from the artist, whether it is a CD or whether it is vinyl, as opposed to, yay, that was great. And now, unfortunately, for people like yourself, the default is people just, their knee-jerk reaction is, I'm going to listen to this person on Spotify. And unless you're an A-lister, that does not pay the bills for people like Dan Maraldi. But I want to go back. I'm thrilled that you started to talk. No one ever talks about how they curate an album. And I think the listener just kind of plays an album and has no real inspiration to think about why does an artist decide to put the songs in the order that they did? Or like you said before about, you know, there was some logic to putting Ulysses first and then to putting the last song last, even if it wasn't necessarily a, you know, a concept from start to finish. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I love that you do have a lot of thought that you put into curating an album.
Yeah. It's so funny how, like, for instance, so Ulysses is followed by Bathwater. And Bathwater, I'll admit, subjectively, it's a silly song. But it's one of those ones where I recognize, like, lyrically, it's kind of a silly song. But I loved how it sounded when it followed Ulysses. Mm. And then I got enough support from people who were like, you know what was stuck in my head? That Bathwater song.
Wow.
And so that one, I was like, okay, don't overthink it. Put Bathwater on the record. And I really like how Ulysses went into Bathwater. And then I was like, okay, what is my, you know, my primary genre as a songwriter? And I think it's, you know, it's rock and roll, power pop. And so then you get Internet Women, which is, I feel like, is probably the most classic to my sound overall. And then you go into Unfollow Me, which I thought sounded good coming out of that one, into more of a, you know, a Stonesy commentary on social media. And then back to the whole vinyl thing is that you get to the, like, a sort of, okay, we've been sort of in a more rock and roll mode, let's take it down a little bit. So then we go into Sublime Love,
turn the album, which, over.
Yeah, so I also did think that is the end of side one, is Sublime Love, if you were to put this on vinyl or cassette or whatever. In my head, where sometimes in terms of listening to vinyl, if you get a song that is, you know, like more of the acoustic song, when you're heading into more of the center of the record, the fidelity is a little better versus if you're trying to do a more full-blown production. That's my understanding of that. And so that's sort of side one. And then you would flip it over and we go into Existential Days, which for a number of acoustic shows has kind of been a show opener the last couple times I've played live. And then we get back into, you know, power pop with Almost Sounds Sincere. And then we go into the experimental moment, which is Indie Film. And it kind of has that ethereal sonic quality. It's one where I let the guy who mixed most of the record, Kyle, he has all these different contraptions. And I had done all my vocals. My friend, who's also named Dan, he did the piano on that. And I sent the stems to Kyle to mix. And I'm like, okay, run it through some of those ethereal machines that you have in your studio. And he's like, okay. And he had a blast doing that. And so you kind of, then coming out of that, you get to You're My Home, where it's like, okay, we're back in a very comfortable place, having gone into outer space. And then I thought of, just, so that's the arc of getting from Ulysses to You're My Home. And then you get to the holiday song, which I really like this Christmas song. I know that when I was writing it, I was so excited by it, where I was like, I think I can write an okay non-Christmas song out of this song, but I'm like, I think it will be better if I make it a Christmas song, but I will be sacrificing its playability by only really being able to play it between mid-November till Christmas. Wow. But I was like, okay, make it the Christmas song. And so I tack that on at the end. It's kind of the encore to the listening experience.
So then on a related note, I would love to hear you talk about songwriting.
Oh, yes. So when I've gotten asked about, you know, songwriting, I say songwriting happens every way, where, you know, it can be a line, it can be playing your guitar, and all of a sudden, I feel like a lot of times with me, I'll either just randomly start singing something, and then I'll either be like, oh, I should figure out what the chords are underneath it. I'll be playing guitar and I'll start humming over top of it, and the humming turns into a word where you start seeing, okay, where do we go with this? And sometimes you're just freestyling and you're like, this is garbage. And sometimes you're like, oh, quick, I need to write this down. And you rush over to either make that voice memo for you to, you know, return to, or just to have, because sometimes as you're writing, things will change from the moment you first, you know, you might know the chords, but you're like, how did that melody go? And it's really nice to be able to reference the recording And then sometimes you'll finish it all at once. Sometimes it'll be a few days. And then there have been songs that have taken 10 years where I wasn't working on them for 10 years straight. It was that I forgot it. They existed. And then somebody said a phrase that reminded me of a title of an unfinished song. On the album before this, that was the case with a song called Last Train Out. And so there was somebody had made reference to a similar titled song. I think it was called like Last Train Home. And I was like, I have a song like that. And it was one of these ones where it's a story song where this guy is trying to decide whether he's going to break up a wedding with the woman he has always loved, but they never were able to make it work out. And I'm in my back when I started writing it, because I went into some notebooks and I realized how long I had been thinking about this song. And it was either I didn't know how the story ended, because it was one of those ones where, you know, I'm not always writing about my life. You know, I like to, you know, make creative tangents. I do write about my life in some songs, but sometimes I'm, you know, making up stories. And this one, I was like, okay, so does he crash the wedding? Does she run off with him at the wedding? Or does it turn into this Quentin Tarantino bloodbath scenario where everybody gets really upset? And I think I just kind of was, I knew that the beginning of the fragment was good enough, but then I started overthinking it and I would put it away. And then 10 years later, that guy was talking about a song called, I think it was called Last Train Home. And I was like, what was my train song? And I all of a sudden I could remember the beginning of the how the first verse went and some of the images that I associated with it. And then I just was like, let's just see if you can bring this bad boy home. That's how it all came back together.
And audience, I want to back up a little bit. Don't miss the lesson that Dan gave out. If you're new at this, if you haven't put out your first recording yet, and you're thinking about something like the track order for whatever this is going to be, your first EP, your first album, I love the tip that Dan gave out of assembling your own playlist first and listening through. So don't miss some of the nuggets that he's dropping. In fact, Dan, there's something else that you mentioned earlier that I want to go back to. We have talked about your new album, Ulysses. We did hear about your history. But what about 2020? You mentioned the pandemic before. What musical lessons did you learn during that?
So personally, I'd had a rough 2019, just a lot of change and breakups and things like that. So I was kind of in a window of a bit of self-doubt. And one of my good friends would come by for whiskey and sympathy, and he would want to hear demos. And I would play him some of these acoustic songs, because I would always try to make like a garage band recording of an outline of a song. And there would be certain ones he'd want to hear again. And so I was like, all right, maybe I'll assemble, you know, a few of these recordings that are homespun acoustic things into a mini album. And so I made this album called Mood Music for Introverts that was just sort of an album to be listened to alone when you're, you know, want some quiet time and you just, you know, sort of need to step back. And ironically, it was released March 6th, 2020.
Wow.
So a week before everything shut down, this album all about, you know, just wanting to be left alone and be quiet and sort of calm your mind as it, from the chaos of the world. It was like, it kind of reminded me of Home Alone, where Macaulay Culkin's character is like, I made my family disappear. It's like, I didn't mean for this album to mean the world should all stop. But it was a good lesson that where I had previously doubted my home recording skills, where that certain songs I know when to outsource it to. The guy who does a lot of my mixing is this guy, Kyle Downs, based in DC. But some of the acoustic songs, I'm like, I think I got this. I can do my thing. And so that collection was one that I had played everything except for a slide guitar part on one of the songs. And so it just was like, in a time of doubt, it was really nice to be like, I made this. I made this by myself in my apartment and people liked it. So I was stuck at home. And also I was making a record where I was toying with the idea of like keeping a band together and figuring everybody's schedules is exhausting. Like, I love playing my songs at full volume, but sometimes when I'm playing an acoustic gig, it's really nice to be able to know like, oh, I don't have to worry about so-and-so's work schedule or when they can practice. Like, it's like, am I available? When can I practice? Oh, I can practice right now.
Yeah.
And getting those things together. So I was also making a work that I could either just be played by me alone or me with a keyboard player. And then the pandemic happened. And so Mood Music for Introverts had gotten some good press. I'm like, well, I might as well make More Mood Music. So I made the second volume. It's called More Mood Music, where I learned some different additional tricks, and I think like different sonic elements to it. And also, you know, everybody was stuck at home, so I'd be like, I wonder what so-and-so playing bass on this would be like. And then they would send me a bass track, wow. or somebody would send me a keyboard track, or some things I did by myself, but, you know, just assembled this thing together. And then that one was even better received than the previous one. So it was like a very harmony heavy thing. But then I started getting, you know, very anxious, as we all went a little crazy at some point during 20. And, you know, with the political situation and just like not knowing when things were gonna be normal, I decided to pivot out of that more folky homespun thing, mm-hmm. and was like, I'm gonna make a really fierce punk record. I'm gonna just like try to get all the darkness out. And so I reached out to like a drummer and bass player who I had not recorded with previously, but I knew them from when I was tour managing. They were on one of the bands that was on the tour, and paid them a certain amount to do the bass and drum rhythm tracks. And then those were sent back to me. And then I did my electric guitars. And then that's when my buddy Ray sent me his remote leads. And one of those songs is what was used in Sid Is Dead, and then tracked my vocals, and then Kyle mixed it. And so those things were like, okay, this sounded pretty good. You know, I knew who to reach out to get things done. And suddenly I was able to create it a much more, on a larger scale, because I wasn't having to be like, okay, I guess I can put aside these 4 days to book a studio, where you're doing it more on your dime. You're still paying people for services, but it's less expensive. And, you know, you can do alternate takes of things because you're just recording in your house and things like that. So it's one of the big lessons I learned.
Yeah, life gave you lemons and you absolutely made lemonade. When we wrap up, and not now, but when we wrap up, we're going to play another song from your new album. But for now, just tell us about the upcoming music video for that song, which is called Unfollow Me.
Yes. So my wife, she's a filmmaker. And so we were honeymooning in Barcelona, and we had access to this beautiful terrace in Barcelona. And we played upon this idea of, like, you know, hotels and the very quote unquote Instagrammable life, and where I'm singing about, oh, you should unfollow me and on these things. But I'm also at the same time, you know, wandering around a spa and eating breakfast on a terrace and, you know, champagne, and just like it's a fun little back and forth. And so she's been finishing up the colorization of the cut she made, and so I don't have a release date for that, but that hopefully should be out maybe by the end of July or sometime in August.
Okay.
But that one is in the pipe.
So that music video release is coming up, and we know that you've got the September 15th show in Cleveland, but what else is ahead for you, and maybe even into 2025?
All right. So I recently booked another show, August 15th, at Arlene's Grocery in New York City. Great venue. And I'll be playing acoustic with perhaps a keyboard player for that one. And so that'll be a mixture of some of the songs from Ulysses and some songs that I think work in an acoustic setting. So check that one out. And then for 2025, I am planning on, I might have, when I was talking about the recording process, is that I also just kept writing songs. And so I had another playlist for another album that I'm in the process of trying to get that ready for, to hopefully have, you know, singles.
Wow.
And then another album. I like the idea of, if I have the material, to do an album a year. So I'm hoping to have that together. The drums are done, the songs are written. I'm still getting some of the bass parts and some of the guitar parts tracked, and then there's the whole mixing. So I can't give you an exact one, but I'm eyeing 2025 for that one, where I think it's a nice weight in terms of like continuing but also exploring new material. So if you were to really like Ulysses, I think this will set you up for further enjoyment, but it also has its own very power pop thing going through it. And I'm pretty excited about that. And also, then if we're talking really far down, I also just have a batch of acoustic songs that I'm not quite sure what to do with, which are kind of thematically tied together with the idea of art and staying motivated as an artist, where it's almost like I'm writing an album for artists, and the idea of finding your own value and creating, even though it might not be something that everybody hears, you know, where like it's easy to be like, you know, procrastinate on stuff, but you know what? Time's finite. If you got the songs in you, make them, you know, chase down those ideas. Yeah. So that's what I got in the pipeline.
I like it. I like it. We're going to close today with the song that Dan talked about the upcoming music video for, called Unfollow Me. Dan, before I let you go and we play that track, share with the audience first all about this song, if you would, please.
Sure. So it's one of those songs that was, I think it took me a year or two to finally get the concept all together, but it was inspired by, you know, the age of social media where somebody sends you a friend request that you maybe knew in your childhood, teenage years, and you knew each other. You maybe weren't like best buds, but it wasn't some stranger requesting you on a social media. So you say yes, and then the algorithm loves to just sort of figure out what you want. So you might have, like, you know, as a courtesy, given a post a like from this newly refound acquaintance, and the algorithm suddenly is like, oh my gosh, let's shove all this person's content in your face. And you suddenly you're seeing these posts all the time where you're like, is this person stable? What's going on? And then you're kind of like, did this person join a cult? You know, and it's just one of those things where like, maybe it was best if you just sort of left that, you know, acquaintance at its natural conclusion, you know, as things ended in pre-social media. So just sort of took that concept and had fun with it.
I like it. That's great. And it's very timely. It's very relevant. There's so many people that are going to listen to the song and nod and smile and say, I can totally relate. Dan, congratulations on the new album. Wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Bruce. It's been
a pleasure. My pleasure. With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Dan Maraldi. Do visit his official website at danmaraldi.com. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Today you heard him talk about Ulysses, the new 10-song album that he released last month. Look in the store section of his website for physical copies of Dan's music, CDs, or purchase digitally from his catalog on the likes of Apple Music or other online digital music retailers. Sure, do go ahead and give him a follow on Spotify, but support Dan by not just simply streaming his music. This morning, I followed Dan on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I know he would appreciate you doing the same. On the homepage of danmaraldi.com, there are links, logos, to go over to his social media. Subscribe to his YouTube channel as well. You heard him talk about the upcoming music video. Watch and like the videos that he has posted on there. For that matter, tell Dan that you heard him and his music. I Now Hear This Entertainment. You just heard him mention the show coming up in August, and I had mentioned before about September 15th in Cleveland. Keep up with him online for dates and information on where you can go see him perform live. Friends, I say it every week, but I honestly do mean it. I truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Dan and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 544. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Dan Maraldi. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Unfollow Me. Rage.
ask of the face.